Hey, podcast listeners, John McElroy here. Your regular dose of unscripted, unapproved, and unusually frank discussion is taking a break this week. But we thought you might enjoy an encore presentation of our Paris Auto Show coverage. Stay tuned for an interview with Infiniti's Johan Dennison, a look at the new Mazda 6 with Jim O'Sullivan, a discussion with Detlev von Platen about the new Porsche Panamera wagon concept, and much more. Thanks for subscribing, and remember, Autoline After Hours will be back to its regular schedule next week with Candace Wheeler, GM's foremost fuels expert. As always, it'll be a great discussion, so we'll see you then.
Autoline Live from the 2012 Paris Motor Show is brought to you by Audi, Truth in Engineering, and by PwC. Prepare for the road ahead. Sign up for PwC's AutoFax Analysis Notes to get the latest automotive analysis, trends, and industry insight.
Well, here we are live from the floor of the Paris show. We've got a lot to show you here today. All kinds of executives that we'll be talking to, all kinds of cars. But I got to warn you, we're not going to get to it all. We've got an hour-long show, and this show is way too big to be able to show you everything. But we do have a lot that we're going to be getting to. And in just a moment here, we have our first interview with Johan Dennison, the head of Infiniti. Some of you will remember that. He had been running Audi in the U.S. market for North America, really. Now they've promoted him to run all of Infiniti globally. And we're going to be getting to him in just a moment. I know that they're tracking him down here right now. And here he comes. So just hold on a second. Here comes my buddy Johan. Johan, great seeing you again.
Fantastic to see you, John.
It's good to meet up with you. I have not talked to you really
it's been a while, hasn't it?
Come here to Infiniti. So you got to tell us the big move. What's it been like so far?
Well, it's been, I guess it's like 70, 80 days now. It's been a very deep dive into getting to the core of the Infiniti business. I've really racked up those frequent flyer miles as I've, familiarized myself with the situation globally. Lots of business in Japan, of course, Asia, China in particular, mm-hmm. strong market. Of course, getting back to my home country in the U.S. so that we can also really leverage the strength of the Infiniti business there. It's been fantastic, though, very enjoyable.
And the headquarters of Infiniti are moving. Tell us why it's coming out of Japan and where you're going.
Well, what we are really looking at now is establishing Infiniti as a completely separate company, separate organization from the parent company, Nissan. And we had to reflect a little bit that nowhere in Japan could we really emerge from the shadow of Nissan. It's so omnipotent and powerful there. And it was really important for us to also symbolically underscore that differentiation and the need to develop not only a standalone organization, but one with its own organizational culture and mindset and philosophy that's really focused on the premium brand and the premium customer. And then I think significantly we want to establish a second volume hub for the brand, which is still very US-centric. And China has got to be that market. And Hong Kong, of course, provides a fantastic gateway to China and still keeps us anchored in our roots as an Asian premium brand.
And you spent time in Japan with Audi. So this is an area of the world that you're very familiar with.
Familiar territory for me, indeed. And it was good to be back there as well.
So tell us what opportunities you see with the Infiniti brand.
Well, as I've mentioned, we need to expand our global footprint. To get into China, you really have to localize. So we're setting up a manufacturing operation. We will produce two models in China. And that will really give us the critical mass in terms of market presence to drive the development of the dealer network, which is then, you need the product and the volume and the dealer network kind of have to develop hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And that gives us a second volume hub. So that I'm quite excited about. But one of the main reasons also for me making this move, it allows me to get into a position where I can steer my own company and my own brand and product is at the center of that. So whereas in the past I would get involved in the product conversation sort of beyond the halfway mark, right now I'm in the very conceptual stage of strategizing the product portfolio and the long-term product strategy, the product substance and the concepts. It's fantastically exciting stuff. And I can tell you this, the stuff we're working on now, Infiniti is going to have awesome firing power in the years to come.
Okay, then that's a perfect segue to talk about the concept car that's right next to us here, the Emerge E. Tell us about it, because this is as sexy as anything I've ever seen Infiniti do.
Well, what the Emerge E does, it really gives some very strong hints as to the future design direction for Infiniti. Of course, it's a fantastic sports car, very high emotional design. But beneath all of that beauty is also some strong hints of the future powertrain technologies that all companies really have to be looking at. And the interior, I think, is probably one of the more interesting aspects of the car that also gives a strong hint as to what we are going to find in some of the new Infiniti models that are already on the horizon.
So when you talk about the powertrain technology, when it says Emerge, I'm taking it this is electric?
Yes, so it's electric hybrid. And, EV technology is at its infancy still. The Nissan Group is a pioneer in this field. And it's absolutely true that when you build a road for the first time, you go a little bit more slowly than when you're already cruising on the highway that's already been built. And as a pioneer, I think the technologies that we see here kind of underscores Infiniti's progressive technology credentials and it gives a strong hint, as I said, of what we might see in our future.
There's a very interesting tie-up with Infiniti and Red Bull Formula One. I got to believe that some of the technology we're seeing in the Emerge E is something that the Red Bull people might be interested in as well.
Well, you know, the Formula One business is also something that is still quite new for Infiniti, and it is fantastic to be associated with a Red Bull team that is so successful. But the next step for us really is to get more involved in the technology. We already are looking at some of the electronics and battery technology transfer. Where this ultimately might lead, we also have areas of low weight technology transfers and exchange of expertise. And ultimately, I would hope that we might even get to the point of being potentially a main engine supplier. All of these things are part of what I'm evaluating right now. And I think the partnership with Red Bull really provides an excellent platform for us to also promote our performance credentials as a high-performance luxury brand.
I love what you're saying here. I love the fact that you're talking about not just having sponsorship of the car, but getting technologically involved with Formula One.
Yeah, I think we need to understand, you know, what was the driving force behind the decisions for Infiniti to get into Formula One. The Infiniti brand in Europe has a relatively small footprint, and so consequently, brand awareness is an issue. Formula One, what an excellent platform to raise awareness. We've already seen the brand metrics have just rocketed. I mean, Infiniti brand has higher recognition today than Alfa Romeo, a brand with a long heritage and history in Europe.
That's stunning to hear.
And the next step for us now is to begin not only to tell people here we are, but to get them to know better who we are. And that's where the real benefit of being involved on the technology front, I think, will come to the forefront.
Okay, and now let's go back to the regular products that anybody can go in the showroom and buy. What are some of the trends that we should be looking out for now that you're at Infiniti?
Well, I think one of the challenges that Infiniti faces is that our product portfolio, being largely US-centric, doesn't cover the full spectrum of the available luxury market. So we need to expand the number of derivatives that we have, and then specifically focusing on Europe, we need four-cylinder engines and gasoline and diesel formats. And so powertrains.
And I would imagine smaller cars, too.
Indeed. So for Europe, we already have announced now that we will be introducing a compact premium model as an entry for the Infiniti line, positioned below the G. We will, of course, see a very stunning new successor to the G in the next 12 to 14 months. And then I'm working with the team also to look at the merits of introducing a car, a really high-performance car, emotional car, one that has strong aspirational appeal, positioned above the M. And that gives us real expansion in the lineup, in both in breadth and depth.
A sports car a la Emerge E or a performance sedan?
No, I think Emerge E is still a little bit further into our future. It's important that we build stepping stones for the brand as we take it upmarket. And I think we could look at a high-performance coupe or sedan rather than a thoroughbred sports car like this one.
Uh-huh. Mm. Well, Johan, it's going to be fascinating watching Infiniti really develop into a true global brand. As you said, it's been largely just in Japan and the United States so far. It's really exciting to see you taking it all around the world.
This is our mission, but I think also important to note that you don't build great brands overnight. We have a long-term vision. I have a 15-year plan. We are busy crafting each milestone in that journey, and it's an exciting journey to be on.
Johan Denijsen, thanks so much for taking your time.
I know
it's really busy here at the show, but it's great to run into you again.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, now we're going to take you through a bit of the show. There's a couple of really cool concept here, cars that I want to show you here. So come on, Carmen, bring the camera, and we'll walk and see what we can show you. I'm going to talk as she shows you some of the things that are here. Give them a little shot of this LE concept. This is another Infiniti concept. Some of you have probably seen all this on the internet already, but zero emission. You know what that means? That means it's electric. It's got the Leaf technology underneath it, and I don't know when or if we're going to see that in production, but it sure looks kind of production to me.
Hey, John.
Hey, Simon. Hey, we're here live.
Hi.
So,
John.
This is Simon Spruill, who's the head of all of Nissan Public Relations. What do you think of the show? What do you like
here? I think it's a good show. You know, I mean, despite the gloom and doom in the marketplace, every manufacturer's got their game face on today. And I think you look around the quality of the product, the quality of the stands, the overall buzz of the show is good. And you know why that's important? Because if we don't care about cars, we can't expect consumers to care about cars. So you know what? As tough as the market is, I think this is the right thing for us to be doing.
I totally agree, and I love how you say with the game face on.
Because absolutely.
I don't hear anybody talking doom and gloom.
No, look,
it's out there. We all know it's there.
Yeah, the global market's going to increase, and it's tough market by market. We know all about that, but it's a big company's long-term investments, great products. That's what's going to solve this business.
Good. Okay. You said that live. Thanks for saying it on Autoline Live at the Paris Show.
No problem at all, John. Yeah. Good to see you.
And thanks again for getting me over to Le Mans this year, too.
Pleasure. Boyhood dream, I guess.
Yeah, it was. It was.
All
okay.
Right.
See, you never know who you're going to run into at this show. And Simon played a key role in getting me over to the 24 Hours of Le Mans this year. So he is A-plus in my book. Okay, Carmen, off to the right here, you see all those globes going up and down in the ceiling? That's the Renault stand, folks, and the best thing about the Renault stand is the stand. They don't have any concept cars or anything all that new to show here, so it's kind of cool. I love the colors. It looks like an Easter egg hunt hanging from the ceiling, but because there's not that much interesting to show you here, let's turn into the Citroën stand, because there's a couple of things to show you here. And the first of that is the DS Cabrio, which of course we'll never see in the States, but it's big over here in Europe. And let's get a shot of the roof of this thing, because they're doing a Cabrio or open air car. Very interesting. You know, most times companies have to start chopping and cutting cars up to make a convertible out of it, which really drives up the cost. But they've done a fabric retractable roof. Kind of interesting. I don't know if pure, you know, convertible enthusiasts would love something like that, but I find it an intriguing approach to take, because you have an open-air car without really all the associated cost that typically goes with a convertible. But come on this way, because Citroën's got even a more important concept car that I want to show you that I really like. Now, any Beatles fans from the White Album remember John Lennon's song Number 9? Well, here is Citroën's concept car that they call Numero 9, or Number 9. It's probably kind of hard to see because they've got a really dark color and they really don't have lights on this thing. So I know detail-wise, you may not be able to really pick up everything that's there, but what I find so interesting is we've seen several concepts along this line from Citroën. Very big car, very long car, but low roof line. Look how low the car is compared to the model standing next to it. And I also find intriguing, again, it's hard to see, this backlight treatment. It's kind of a spoiler that extends out of the roof, almost kind of a sunshade thing over the backlight. It probably doubles as a spoiler. it absolutely triples as a styling element to the car. And when you look at the LED-like graphics of the headlamps and the tail lamps, this car pops. You know, I just wish that they had done it in a color or had lit this thing in a way that you could see more detail on it. I mean, even here with the naked eye, it's hard to pick up. But nonetheless, I think this car would have amazing road presence coming down the road. And it's just cool to see Citroën here coming out with a concept at the Paris show. Okay, enough of that. Now let's go over to Peugeot, because they have what I think is the best concept car at the Paris show. And this thing is wild. And wild from a couple of standpoints. Number one, it's very sleek, but as you're going to see in a moment here, they have a very interesting use of materials. A combination of exterior materials I've never seen anyone do before. And in my mind, this is kind of the modern day return to the brass car. You know, if you go before 1920, they didn't have chrome, they had brass. This isn't brass, but it's the closest thing to it that you're going to see. And this, people, is the Peugeot Onyx. The bright work that you're seeing there is copper. Kind of looks like brass, but it's not, it's copper. And then the rest is a satin finish carbon. And I just love the juxtaposition of the carbon and the copper together. And I love the look of this car. Peugeot, as you all know, is a company that's in deep trouble right now, deep financial trouble. But this car proves these guys have not forgotten how to do fantastic automobiles. To me, this thing just looks terrific. And as I said before, this, in my mind, is the best concept at this show. There's nothing else that I think that really pushes the design envelope and pushes it not just in the shape, as I said, but the use of materials. Very unique. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Let's go over to the Mazda stand, because they've got the new 6 there. And we'll learn a few more things about what's new with the new 6. Oh, quick one here too, Carmen. Let's show this one. Everybody has been asking about, boy, they have hybrids and they have diesels. When is there ever going to be a diesel hybrid? And that's what we got. You can show it on the door right here. Four-wheel drive, hybrid diesel. And I got to believe this thing's expensive. Yeah, 41,000 euros. See, that's the only problem is diesels can be pricey. And watch your step coming down with that camera, Carmen. And hybrids can be pricey. You put the two things together and you've got the most expensive solution whatsoever, 41,000 euros. Now that's with tax, but even so, it's an expensive car. Hey, check this out on the right. That's one thing that I love about the European shows is you see these little boutiques that sell all different kinds of things, you know, t-shirts and dolls and whatnot, lighters, all about the Paris Auto Show, you know, the kind of thing that you typically don't see in the U.S. shows. And look at this, a little bakery in here, too. I love that. I know we're supposed to be showing you the cars, but I want to get a flavor of what it's like being at the show in Paris, because it's not like we see in the U.S. Okay, here we go. Mazda is right around the corner. And there's the new Mazda 6. But I want to find Jim O'Sullivan, because I know he's around here someplace. And he's the head of Mazda North America. And I know he'll be able to show us and tell us what's new about this car. Well, where is he? Ah, there he is.
Here he is right here.
Hey. Jim. Hey, how are you?
I'm doing terrific. How
good,
about yourself?
Good to see you. Thanks for coming by the Mazda stand. Good to see you.
Well, I want to hear about this new 6.
Well, what do you think of it?
I think it looks very dramatic, and I love how you've got the same sort of grill shape that you've got on the CX-5, which is one of my favorite vehicles that's come out this year.
Yeah, one of the things, obviously, it does, it's an extension of the Koto design that we have with CX-5. We're launching the vehicle here, certainly in Paris. It's going to be in the U.S. market in January. It's a 2014 model. And we've got a
full
lot of...
Full Sky Active, right?
Full Sky Active. Just like the CX-5 is, all Sky Active technologies. Same thing on the Mazda 6. So we're really excited about it. The wagon version, as you see here...
Don't get excited back in the States.
...is only going to be here in Europe. But obviously, we always kind of take a look at the segments. But the car is very dramatic, and a chance to drive it, it's really drives fantastic.
So tell us a little bit about some of the details. Start with the powertrain. What are we going to have in the U.S.?
Well, we're going to start with the powertrain. It's a 2.5-liter Skyactiv engine, all new. Certainly with availability of manual and automatic transmissions, as Mazda would be. Great drive dynamics, great performance. A lot of safety technology that's incorporated in the vehicle also. Certainly a lot of things that we're doing relative to taking things to the next level over the current generation Mazda 6. So we're excited about it and looking forward to a great launch after the first of the year.
Now, I don't want to pry too much out of you that you can't talk about without getting in trouble, but the diesel that you guys have talked about, when will we see that in the U.S. market?
Well, you will see diesel sometime next year.
Uh-huh.
We have not announced what vehicle line it's going into, but obviously right now we will launch in Europe with Mazda 6 with diesel, and we're selling diesel on CX-5 here in Europe also. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at what opportunities that we might have, and we'll probably get closer as we get closer to the end of the year to make those announcements, maybe around L.A. or Detroit auto shows.
Uh-huh. Now, I got to believe the 6 is going to be built in Japan. Is that something you can still pull off with the way the yen is?
Very much so, because the interesting thing is in our flexible manufacturing, since it's one plant that's supplying the globe, and also within the Hofu plant, we build a lot of other vehicles. So as a result of it, we're going to be able to mix and match in terms of meeting market and world demand versus just having one plant totally dedicated to do it. The Flat Rock thing really worked out great from the standpoint of working with Ford, because obviously, you know, they're taking up all that capacity, which is good. It's good for the people in Flat Rock. We're really happy with it. And we're still 50-50 with Ford in Flat Rock, so they're still our partner there. So we're taking the production single source, and it makes good sense for us to do that.
You've got to be excited about this car, and I say that because the CX-5 has been a slam home run for you.
Yeah, I mean, just to put it in perspective, when we first originally looked at launching CX-5 on a global basis, 160,000 units worth of volume, we've taken it up to 200,000 this year. We're going to take it to 240,000 next year. So for a company that sells 1.2 million units a year, to go from 160 to 240 in the first year of the launch is really fantastic. So, and we're still can't meet demand. We could use another 20,000 our fiscal year within the U.S. alone.
Wow.
So it just talks about the strength of Skyactiv and the technology and the acceptance of the market and the great value, but still great design, great drive dynamics, great handling. And Mazda 6 obviously is going to be another iteration of that.
And the CX-5 is not exactly in a moribund segment of the market. I mean, that's a hot segment, too.
Well, if you take a look at the two big segments, I mean, certainly the fastest growing one is the smaller crossovers. Certainly Ford Escape, CX-5, RAV4, CR-V. But the CD segment also is a very, very big segment. Tough segment, but still a very big segment within the U.S.
Well, this year especially, you know, you got Fusion, Altima, Accord,
yes.
You know, Camry was last year.
Absolutely.
You know, in fact, it's amazing. I think right now the Hyundai Sonata is going to be about the oldest car in the segment.
It is. I would have to say, when you take a look at the car and truck segments within the industry, stand-down full-size trucks, the toughest segment relative to really making hay and inroads is CD. To me, that's probably, when you look at both car and truck combined, it's where heavy duty competition is. And like you say, with CD, everyone's got something new. But we think with what we're offering up on Koto design, the great drive dynamics, Mazda 6 not having to push volume, I think we're going to have a very successful launch of the car.
You going to do anything different marketing wise on this thing?
Well, we'll start shipping to the dealers in the first quarter. We'll probably do a lot of digital stuff in the first few months, but then probably the heavy lifting will probably start sometime in the spring in terms of marketing and advertising.
Once you have cars every
day. Yeah, but we're working with Garage Team Mazda, WPP agency that we're working very closely with on launch, but still working obviously with a lot of our current owners, and this is the very start of it now that we can start showing the car.
So how are things out there in the market for you right now? September, they keep saying, is a good month.
I saw the J.D. Power numbers before I left. It's up double digits year on year. I mean, our retail numbers this month are coming in pretty good. We're pretty pleased. Our sell-down on our 2012s is going well, getting ready for the 2013 model. So market's still good. Knock on wood, it's going to continue to be that way between now and the end of the year. So we're guardedly optimistic.
So the six you've got coming in the beginning of the year, anything else we should be on the lookout
well,
for?
Well, certainly Mazda 6 is coming, but we announced and did the reveal in Australia last week. We've got a major refresh coming on CX-9 that will be in the market in November and December. So here we've got certainly CX-5 still launching, we've got a refresh CX-9, and then an all-new Mazda 6 after the first of the year, along with all of our SkyActiv engines in Mazda 3. So, and we've got a great product cadence for next year that I'll talk to you about in Detroit.
Darn it! Wanted to get that now. What else? What else am I missing here that
no,
we should know about
things
Mazda?
Are good. Glad to see you at the stand and appreciate it. And looking forward to a really good, strong close to this calendar year. Looking forward to next year.
Have you been around the show much at
yes,
all?
Yes,
anything stand out in your mind?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing is there's, what they say, 80 reveals here in Paris for the show. But when you really think about it, how many of those products are going to be sold globally? So, obviously, Mondeo, Ford Fusion, the new Golf, I think they've done a lot of good things on the interior. The Jaguar, beautiful. I think they've done an excellent job in terms of the execution. Obviously, some of the more regional brands, I call regional Citroën, Peugeot and stuff, got some interesting things. But, you know, this is always kind of a great show because what they have in sell here, they don't necessarily sell in Detroit or North America. But there's a lot of ideas that you can get in terms of design and technology that obviously can apply to us. So,
real good. Jim O'Sullivan, thanks so much for your time.
Always
really
great to see you.
Yeah,
thank you very much. Thank you.
Can't wait to drive that 6.
You'll be in it soon.
Okay.
Thank you, Bree.
And we're going to be back right after this.
That was fast.
We're out of here.
You run into all kinds of people at all the international auto shows, and right now I'm with Rick Hanna from PwC, the global automotive leader. And Rick, thanks for talking with us here, but I guess I got to ask you, what's your overall reaction to the show?
Well, it's pretty exciting. You know, we hear a lot about the negatives in Europe from the U.S. I'm based in Detroit, as you know, and all the press talks about how ugly the situation is over here. You get over here and you talk to industry insiders, and sure, they have a lot of challenges. There's a lot of things they're working on, but overall, they're pretty optimistic, and they know they have to restructure, and they know they have to take capacity out. But they take the long-term perspectives, and they know they got to keep investing in the pipeline, they got to keep investing in technology, and they got to keep the customers happy.
Well, of course, the long-term perspective is absolutely necessary with the problems they've got here. Don't you see it that way?
Oh, absolutely. Where they are right now is where the U.S. was in 2008, 2009. Inflexible work rules, issues with the workforce, inability to take capacity out, and way too much capacity.
Well, we'll see how they deal with that. But tell me some of the stuff that you've got going at PwC these days, especially your AutoFax operation. Let the audience know a little bit of what that's about.
Well, AutoFax is our analyst group, internal analyst group. They do monthly forecasts on the industry assembly volumes around the world. They do kind of six-year look at assembly down at the platform level. They do key trends. They do monthly analyst notes on developments around the world. One of the real exciting things we've got coming out is an app for your iPhone and your iPad so that you can have industry assembly data right in your palm when you need it and where you want it.
Wait a minute. I need this. Can anybody get this?
You can go to our PwC website, PwC AutoFax website, and that's where you can sign up for the analyst notes. And this app will be at the Apple App Store in the next couple weeks.
Well, that's fantastic because, you know, for anybody who really wants to keep an eye on what's going on in the industry, having information like that at your fingertips is going to really be a help.
Well, I hope so. It does show what the assembly forecasts are by territory, by, you know, OEs, by alliance groups. And it is a six-year forecast, so it's our current views on where the industry's going and what the industry challenges are that the insiders are facing.
We're at the Paris Auto Show, but I know you spend a lot of time in China. What's your outlook for the Chinese industry? There's some questions now. Looks like it's slowing down, or how do you see it?
Well, certainly I think it is slowing down. We're seeing numbers this year are going to be, you know, 6 to 10% growth from last year. That's what it was last year. It was about 8% growth. But before that was 20 and 30% growth. So you do see a slowdown of the growth. But the real question is, when are they going to hit 30 million units? You know, right now the U.S. industry is about 15 million units, 14 to 15 million units. China passed the U.S. industry in 2011. And just growth is forecast. Everybody's announcing biggest expansion programs. Everybody's got new factories they're bringing online. There's going to be more and more capacity coming online. But there is a little bit of a hiccup right now.
And North America, what do you see going on? What's your outlook for the U.S. especially, but also Canada and Mexico?
Well, North America, largely driven by the U.S. Market. North America or Mexico and Canada are you know, 1,000 or a million units type assembly volumes. But North America is really driven by the U.S. The U.S. is up about 20% this year. Still recovery volumes. We're nowhere near the 16 and 17 million units that we were in the 2005, 2006 levels. But very nice growth. And one of the real big challenges for the U.S. right now is the supply chain. Is there enough capacity to meet the growth numbers? And you got a very old fleet, a car park in the U.S. Industry estimates about 10 to 11 years, so the record age of the fleet, so there's good replacement buying, and big growth numbers.
Well, I love hearing that maybe there's a capacity issue that there's not enough, because that's the right kind of problem to have rather than the other way around.
Certainly right. The U.S. Restructured, as you know, in 2009, took about 5 million units of capacity out of the market. That was about 20% of the U.S. capacity. So big volumes came out, very painful at the time. We all went through it. We all lived through it. And it's much funner to come back up than to go down.
You know it. Rick, thanks so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
And enjoy the rest of the show.
And you too. Thank you.
Well, we're at the Audi stand right now, and I'm talking with the president, the new president of Audi North America,
exactly right.
Scott Keel. Scott, great having you here.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you very much, John.
So,
absolute pleasure.
And you're new to Audi, or at least as president.
How's
it all going right now?
It's been amazing. It's a great time to be at Audi, as you know. Record sales, great products, and what beats being with Audi in Paris. Great time.
And you got to tell me about the car that we've got right here, the RS5.
Absolutely. Well, you know, John, this fulfills our RS strategy, and it's something that's extremely important to the brand. Make sure we get these high-performance, high-image models out there. It started with the TTRS last year. We just launched the RS5 Coupe in the marketplace. It's been a home run. And, of course, now we're bringing the stunning Cabriolet. And officially reporting, we are bringing the car. It'll be here next year. It'll be in a Cabriolet, and it's great. And I think you can see from the front end, it's very RS. Mescaril, clear intentions, a very aggressive car. Of course, the engine, 450 horsepower V8, normally aspirated, dual-clutch transmission, absolutely stunning machine. And we have a lot of pre-orders and a lot of excitement, and that's the way Audi likes to do business.
Well, and especially with the RS, it can't just be stunningly beautiful. It's got to be stunningly quick as well.
Exactly right, and that's what this car is. And it's a very quick machine, and the response has been huge.
That's terrific. And there's a number of other things going on at the Paris show. A new A3, they're showing the Sportback. My understanding is we're not going to see that in North America.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. We're, of course, bringing the A3 sedan, as you know. And this is going to be an extremely important vehicle for us. It'll be in the first quarter of 2014. But, you know, surprise of surprises, Americans said, yeah, they won't be accepting of hatchbacks, or as we like to call it, a Sportback. And truth be told, this car has been very successful for us. This is the next generation car. And I will not say we're not going to bring it. I think this is something we're going to take a long look at, and don't be too surprised if we figure out a way to get it into the States. It's a great car.
Very interesting. And then the other big reveal that Audi's got at the Paris show is this concept, the Crosslane.
It is. Crosslane Coupe, as you can see here. And I think this was very smart. Is I think the first thing you can see is a real future look of what the Qs of Audi will be like. Certainly, you can see the three-dimensional grille and how we manifested that. You can see the new direction on LED lights. And I think what you can really see is a sporting character in an SUV. I think also some executions, whether or not we go there with the Targa and things like that, is very cool. But I think it really packages up an SUV, sporting characteristics, classic Audi design. We'll see where it goes, but it could give you a good feel of Q lines in the future.
What I find especially interesting on the grille is you're not using a chrome surround to sort of identify what the grille is. It's a very design element in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, if you can list two of the things that have really given us visual impact on the road, as you know, it's been the mythical and famous LED lights and, of course, the single frame grille. And I think this is a very distinct way of looking at it. But it really almost takes the grille and, as opposed to isolating from the car, really merges it into the elements that you've talked about. So the chrome has moved away. But the way they've made it three-dimensional, the way it comes out from the car, I think is going to be very unique and very cool. It's an iconic image of the brand. We don't want to walk away from that grille, and it's a smart way to reinvent it, as Audi always does.
Scott, Audi's been on such a roll in the American market now.
Yeah.
I understand that you're really starting to put a lot of emphasis at the dealer level. And not just in building beautiful stores, but in the training of the people as well.
You're exactly right. I mean, there's one thing to have stunning products. There's one thing to have good-looking stores. Have you seen? And our dealers are investing like mad. They've seen the profitability. They've seen the hot brand. But the big thing now for us is loyalty. And the big thing us for now is treating customers well. And as you know, that's not about sheet metal. That's about behavior. It's about attitude. It's about how to treat people. And we are doing an extremely, extremely big initiative. We're in the middle of it right now. 8 cities, 16 presentations across the country. We've invited each and every employee of the dealerships. Over 12,000 employees are going through this. We call it sort of an Audi TED conference, if you will. These great presentations that speak about humanity, treating customers well, and doing the right thing. Reaction's been great. So we're excited, but you know, we're a little jet lagged from all the traveling around.
I can believe it. That's a lot of people. And what's so impressive to me is it's not just the dealer owners. It's not just the salespeople. Yeah. You're talking about everybody.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think the way most automotive manufacturers would have looked at it is you would have had a dealer principal give a first-class flight, send them to Monaco, and tell them loyalty is important to us, and then say, we'll see you in 2 years. That's just not the way Audi does things. We like to speak to the people who are really interacting with customers, porters, cashiers, receptionists. These are people day in and day out interacting with customers. And the fact that we recognize them, the fact that we spoke to them directly and made a personal appeal, I think it's going to pay back in spades. It's the next frontier of the brand, and we're going to get there.
You seem to be rolling along really well in the American market right now. How does it look for the rest of the year?
We think it looks real good. September's on its way to a great retail month. We are going to have another record year. I'd say we land somewhere in the high, 130,000. So that would be good 18 to 20% growth for us. We'll gain market share. But I think the more important thing is you've seen a lot of madness in the business, whether it's punch programs or demo programs and things like that. What Audi is doing is real retail business, selling cars to real people who really love them. We've also dramatically decreased our incentives, and we think that's a smart way to run a business. People want to like the car, pay the proper price for it. And that's where we are, and it's working great.
That's terrific. Scott Keogh, thanks so much, but I got to get to some of the other stands right now.
No, it's a shame. You should stay here at Audi. This is where all the action is.
Thanks so much.
No, absolute pleasure. Thank you, John.
Absolute
pleasure.
PwC, driving value. Check out PwC's latest thought leadership to gain insight about the latest M&A activity, supplier trends, tax updates, and much more at www.pwc.com/auto.
Now we're in the Porsche stand, live again, of course, with Detlef von Platen, the head of Porsche Cars North America. Great having you here talking with us about a great show going on here, but especially this car. You got to tell us what this is all about.
Very exciting. Yes, we are showing here, presenting the Panamera Sport Turismo, which is basically to show how intelligent and efficient drive technology can look in a design language of the future.
Now, this is sort of like a Panamera shooting brake, is how people have been describing this. Is that an accurate description?
Yeah, it's a kind of shooting brake concept. We are here talking about a concept, so we are not talking here about something which is decided yet.
Mm-hmm.
Just get first the reaction from people here in France and in
Europe.
I'll
give you my reaction. It looks fantastic.
I can tell you. You're not the only one. And we are basically showing how performance and practicality could be combined in the future. And also to show the future development of hybrid technology, where we know that we have started with the hybrid today with two production cars, the Cayenne S Hybrid and the Panamera S Hybrid. Here we are now talking about e-hybrid, showcasing a new, completely new hybrid motor, which will be able to drive longer, drive pure electric, up to 80 miles an hour, and this for 20 miles at least. So, new technology, new concept, a new body style, much more practicality inside, and the design is very hot, I think.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the Panamera, which is terrific, with that fastback look, I don't know, there's something about this with the more formal backlight that just nails the proportions on this car.
Yeah, we have extended a little bit the roof line. The car has been, but we kept the car very compact, very sporty. So it's kind of new sporty body style. We have a new LED technology with this four eyes LED technology in the front. You can see this here or in the back. Big wheels. And again, a lot of space inside without losing the performance perception of the car. So I think it's a good exercise here.
Well, in my book, my experience tells me that when the public shouts hooray when they see a car, that's the signal that a car company should put it in production.
Absolutely. And I think we got this feedback from many, many customers looking, especially customers driving an SUV today, looking for something new in the market. The Sportwagen concept was very, very successful in the United States, especially many, many years ago. And then the SUV came because they found the Sportwagen a little bit boring, right? And now SUV customers are like looking for something new, something more stylish, design is more important, still space, still functionality, and performance. And this is something which could be maybe an answer in the future.
Could be maybe. It sure looks production ready to me.
You know,
a few little tricks maybe no, but the overall silhouette, the body style, I could see this in production very easily.
We like to be very authentic and credible at Porsche, so we do not want to show only something which is nice on the stand. It runs, it drives, it has a new technology inside, with a very nice engine. We have here a drive system with an output of roughly 416 horsepower. But looking also at the efficiency, which is very important also in the United States, we are talking here about very low emissions. We don't have now the equivalent for miles per gallon, but in talking in Europe terms, this car will be able to use only 3.5 liters for 100 kilometers. Mm-hmm. It's very, very low for this power, right?
And the CO2, which is another big statistic that it gets quoted in Europe, do you know that?
Absolutely. We are talking here about 78 grams.
Oh my God, way under 100.
Absolutely. Way well. And again, this is a car we can be charged now. It's a plug-in car, so it can be charged at home. Needs roughly less than 2.5 hours. And you can basically leave home, pure electric, come home, pure electric. And sometimes you want to have some good guts and some good feeling in your body.
Of course.
Then you have the engine there.
We don't want to destroy the planet. We want to help it, but we want to go fast too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's pretty impressive. 80 miles an hour in pure electric mode. That's by far the highest I've heard anybody quote.
Yeah, because I think we are still a sport car manufacturer. So we do not want to come with hybrid technology without having the emotions of what you are used to get with a Porsche, right? Uh-huh. And for sure, if Porsche is doing something in this direction, we will come with emotions.
And with the combination drive, any chance that this would be all-wheel drive?
This will be, could be, all-wheel drive too.
That's great. And if the company was thinking about building this, what sort of time frame are we talking about?
It's not decided yet. I mean, we are already talking, I mean, honestly, you're talking about a concept, getting and gathering all the response from what we'll hear today and the next days here in Paris. We might do the same in the United States. I'm very confident about this concept in the United States. And it's unique in the segment where we are at the moment. It's very sporty, so it keeps the value of Porsche. And especially showing now the efficiency we can get out of the sporty cars, I think we have good potential there.
Well, I was at the Volkswagen Group presentation last night where they went through 9 different brands. And as you know, the reaction to this car was sensational.
Absolutely. I mean, again, the icon of the brand is the 911. We are very, very strong and clear on this. We have seen that with the 911 through the history, we were very successful with building and developing new derivatives like the Cabriolet, like the Targa, the Turbos. And we are now exploring a little bit what kind of potential we could have with the Panamera. And this is one idea. Uh-huh. We have other ideas.
Well, I love hearing about that because it's really impressive to see Porsche go from a little niche brand to more and more becoming a major manufacturer.
Yeah, but again, volume is not our target.
I know that.
We are not
a
volume manufacturer.
But nonetheless, the volume is going up.
Sure, we want to grow. We want to be successful so that our partners in the market can continue to invest in good satisfaction for the customers. But again, we are very, very proud and respectful of our values. We don't want to dilute it. And we are not doing it simply because of growing in terms of volume. Volume is a consequence of what we will be and how we will be in the future in the markets.
Yeah. And you seem to be having a good year this year, too.
Very strong year. We might have a new record in the United States, so I'm very happy.
And I love that. That's another sign that the U.S. market's coming back, when you can talk about having a record.
It's coming back. I mean, remember the years 2008, 2009.
But let's never forget that, because we don't want to go back there again.
But I'm seeing now more and more traffic in our Porsche centers, people smiling again, getting back, even with some cautious. Confidence in the future. That's very good. Of course, everybody is looking at Europe at the moment. You know, we are in Paris here with some concerns. Mm-hmm. But all in all, I think the United States is back. Everybody was looking at China. I strongly believe in the United States. And the United States is the biggest market for Porsche in the world. It will stay like this.
Very good. Delev, thanks so much for your time today. It's a pleasure running into you
again
at the Paris Auto Show. Thanks for your time. Really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
Okay, and now I've got to find my producer, Chip Drake, and figure out where we're going next. Carmen, our camera person here, tell me we're going to Volkswagen. So, come on, people. We'll go for the ride. And this has been a big show for the Volkswagen Group. You know, we've talked to Audi, we've talked to Porsche. Last night, they showed us Seat and Skoda. And even Ducati. In fact, I learned a new term last night. They referred to the Ducatisti. Now, you've heard of the Tifosi, the Ferrari fans. Well, Ducatisti are the fanatics for the Ducati brand. And like I said, never heard that before. So I wrote that one down just so you folks could hear about it today.
Yeah, getting later.
But of course, the big news at Volkswagen is with their new Golf. And I've heard some people criticize it because they think it's not that sexy or all that different, and I'd say, well, that's exactly the point of that car. This is truly the people's car, the biggest volume car that Volkswagen has globally, and they've got the new one. So you'll instantly recognize it as the new Golf, but we'll learn a little bit more about it here because I think we're going to run into Jonathan Browning, the head of Volkswagen of America. And I'm sure he can tell us a whole lot more about the car. But before anybody shows up, one of the things I wanted to point out is, look at the cut on the headlights here. What I find that gives the look of the car, I don't know if meaner, but certainly more assertive. You know, almost kind of a shark eye, eagle eye look to the car. And another thing that may not show up very well, we should get another color car to look at, is this very pronounced crease line. As you all know, in Europe, you've got to have pedestrian protection so that the hood can collapse if a pedestrian gets hit and their head hits it. You have to give them a certain amount of crush space by law. Very interesting to me how they've hidden the fact that this hood line rises so much for pedestrian protection. You know, there was some question when that rule was first put in place that, it was going to ruin the front-end design of so many cars in Europe really hasn't done that at all. And that's one of the first things that I picked up on as a styling cue in the new Golf. And come on, let's swing it around a bit more, Carmen, so that we can show people what this thing's all about. Hey, Mark.
Good. Good seeing you.
Yeah.
Okay. Another very subtle thing is how they've taken the A-pillar up into the roof, and again, very subtle lines. It's as if they take it all the way to the back of the car. Again, very subtle that they have.
Yeah.
John, how are you?
I'm doing
good
terrific.
Excellent.
With Jonathan Browning now, the head of Volkswagen of America, and we were just pointing out some of the new design, very fine detail in this new generation Golf.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great vehicle to spend some time looking at, because what you begin to pretty quickly realize is how the wheels have gone out closer to the corners, the vehicle's wider, the roof line is lower. But I think the thing that really strikes you is, as you say, that detail and craftsmanship in terms of the metal finish, taut surfaces, but very, very precise lines. And it's a vehicle that you can just absorb looking at. And this is artificial light in here, but out on the street, it really pops. It's great.
Yeah, it really does. In fact, let's move down one more car,
sure,
because some of the detail doesn't show up in this white car.
Yeah.
And it's got the harsh light on it, and it shows up more here.
Yeah.
This one.
It's about not just about the gaps and the precision of the gaps, but it's the sharpness of these creases in terms of the metalwork and how they really flow through the vehicle in total. And so it's a really, I would say, it's a work of art in terms of the sheet metal. And then when you understand some of the technology behind that sheet metal that has led to this significant weight reduction, 220 pounds approximately per vehicle, and a large piece of that has come from this warm forming of the sheet metal before it's stamped. That allows you to have thinner sheet metal, but it's actually much more rigid. And so lots of technology behind this this incredibly good-looking vehicle.
Hot stamping, as they call it in the States. I've had some people tell me, well, you know, this car doesn't look that sexy. In fact, it looks like a Golf. And to which I said, yeah, exactly.
It is a Golf, yeah.
You don't mess with something that's so successful.
No, and really that's been our approach over the years, is to continue to evolve a winning formula. But I think the fascination is kind of in the discovery of what goes beyond the skin. And those are the things that allow the vehicle to have become, let's say, even more accommodating in terms of interior space, but save weight and add a bunch of features as well. And so it's a vehicle that we're very proud of, and really sets a foundation in terms of a very broad portfolio of vehicles around the world.
This car sells phenomenally well in Europe. It's not your best-selling car in the U.S. market. In fact, the Jetta outsells this. Do you think this new design is going to switch that or no?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Jetta has been a mainstay of our business for a long time, and obviously we've added Passat over the last year, and those two have now really become very significant volume players in the U.S. market. We believe Golf will go through a similar transition as we bring it into the market in 2014, and it's very exciting to have this type of vehicle available to our customers in the U.S.
One of the things that, of course, has helped Volkswagen in the U.S. is changing the pricing, especially the base pricing of the car. Should we expect the same strategy on this?
You know, what we've done is to really make sure that each vehicle is positioned right in the heart of its relevant competitive set. And you know, with the Golf, I would say we're starting from a position closer to that already. So not massive change, but certainly the balance of features, of content, price positioning, I think will appeal very well to the U.S. customer.
Jonathan, you got to feel good about the way things are going for Volkswagen of America. I think of the five top growing companies, a couple of which are Japanese, coming off a very low base from last year. So, of course, showing a great percentage change, but you're just showing a great percentage change.
Yeah, and I think the encouraging thing is that this is now the third consecutive year of strong growth. So in 2010, it was 20%, 2011, 23%, this year to date, 37 plus percent. And those, I think, begin to indicate how we're really building the foundations of the business to go forward. And we've talked previously and we said this isn't just about driving some specific sales numbers. This is about really putting in place the foundations for sustained and profitable growth for our retailers, for us in the US market. And you're beginning to see the fruits of some of that play out here. I mean, the fact that as a company we committed this $4 billion investment program just before the recession hit, and we didn't back off it by $1 or put the timing back 1 week. I mean, we really stayed the course through that recession, and you begin to see that really paying off in terms of what is now happening in the marketplace.
You say it's not about sales numbers, but you've thrown out a pretty aggressive sales number that you want to hit later in this decade.
Yeah.
Still got to feel good that it looks to me like you might be on track to hit that.
Well, and you know, it's
800,000, isn't that the number that you've talked about?
Interesting you say that, because when we first laid out that pretty aggressive plan back in 2007, people said, you know, VW Group as a leading manufacturer, or the leading manufacturer around the world. And what it really was doing was setting out an ambition for the organization, and especially for the U.S., to say to the global organization, things have to change. Yeah, business as usual will not deliver for the group a million sales in the U.S. And so had to be a change, had to be a clear engagement with the U.S. marketplace and delivering what the U.S. customer wants. And, yeah, that journey is not complete, but we've made a good start.
You sure have. What else am I missing here? What else should we be on the lookout for with Volkswagen?
You know, obviously Golf is center of attention, but there's a lot going on across the organization. We've got a lot of updates to individual vehicles across the lineup in the U.S. marketplace, and the new CC for model year 13 is still a very attractive, very compelling vehicle in the marketplace. And so when you put that together with the success and momentum of Jetta and Passat, with vehicles like Tiguan and Touareg, and not to forget, of course, the Beetle, which we'll be revealing an exciting new execution of the Beetle in L.A. in a couple of months' time. There's plenty going on.
What do you mean, an exciting new execution?
I think it's an open secret. It's the long-awaited Beetle Cabriolet will be revealed in L.A.
Okay, very good. We'll be on the lookout for that, and for lookout for you there as well.
Great.
Jonathan, thanks for your time today. Really appreciate
it. Nice, John. Good to see you again.
Okay.
Take care.
Good deal. Okay. Okay. Yeah, we got a couple of minutes yet for the show. Let's zip across real quickly to Bentley. You got to see the racing car that they've got here. And I'm hoping we can show you this racing car from Bentley, because there might be a crowd around it. No, we can get a look at it. And one of the points that Bentley really wanted to make is that racing is important to it. It's going to put a big effort into it. And so you've got this outrageous car here. So Carmen, let's see if you can give everybody a look of what this is like. And it just shows you that, you know, Bentley's got a great racing heritage to it, and they don't want to give up on that. And I got to believe everybody in Britain feels pretty good about this, because the crew factory is what's really behind this effort right here. And with that, I think we're going to get drowned out here very quickly with another presentation that's going to get going. As I told you at the top of the show, we were really not able to show you everything that's going on at the Paris Auto Show this year. But tune in to AutoLine Daily, because we're going to be shooting more packages of more of the other vehicles. And while we couldn't catch it all live, we will be showing you everything that was going on here. Anyway, John McElroy, live from the Paris Show. Thank you all for joining us. Really want to thank our sponsors that have made this possible, especially like LiveView, bringing the technology that makes this all really possible for us to bring you the show. Again, thanks for tuning in.
AutoLine Live from the 2012 Paris Motor Show is brought to you by Audi, truth in engineering, and by PwC, prepare for the road ahead. Sign up for PwC's AutoFacts Analysis Notes to get the latest automotive analysis, trends, and industry insight.